Track 4, Women's Voices, pages 4 through 8, Women Making History. Women made up a significant portion of petitioners, almost a quarter overall, throughout the 17th and 18th centuries. Their petitions reveal how they engaged and challenged patriarchal systems, and they commonly used petitions as a legal route to gain financial maintenance from current or former spouses. However, there are also many cases of women petitioning for other rights, including business ventures, monetary compensation from the government, and, for enslaved women, freedom. Fighting to clear her name, that my name that has been wronged may be restored. Abigail Faulkner lived with her husband Francis and five children in Andover, Massachusetts, in the late 17th century. In 1692, during the hysteria of the Salem witch trials, accusations of witchcraft began popping up in neighboring settlements, including Andover. After Francis contracted a mysterious illness and began exhibiting odd behavior, Faulkner, two of her daughters, sister, and several of neighbors were among the accused. Imprisoned, convicted, and sentenced to death, Faulkner's execution was delayed due to her pregnancy. By 1693, Faulkner was released from imprisonment, but her conviction was never overturned. It was not until 1710 that Faulkner petitioned the government to receive reparations for her imprisonment, fighting for her family, to maintain herself and family. In a helpless situation and distressed with five children on her own, Freeloth Scott petitioned to the Massachusetts legislature during the Revolutionary War for a divorce and an allowance from her loyalist husband's estate in October 1777. She was careful to emphasize that while her husband fled as a pro-British supporter, she disagreed with his politics. Scott's petition was significant because the newly formed Commonwealth of Massachusetts recognized that a woman could have a political opinion separate from her husband's, therefore acknowledging a level of autonomy. In fact, her individualism from her husband would be rewarded. It's all just a bunch of hocus-pocus. Petitioning to Salem's Town Committee, Faulkner's 1710 appeal asks for reparations for the sufferings she and her children sustained while imprisoned on charges of witchcraft. She asked that fees she had paid during imprisonment and expenses she incurred traveling to and from court be paid back to her. In December 1711, Massachusetts Governor Joseph Dudley granted a sum of £578.12, a little over $76,000 today, to be split among 25 accused individuals or their families. Massachusetts Archives Collection, 135-154, Petition of Abigail Faulkner requesting compensation after her imprisonment for witchcraft, September 18, 1710. SC1/Series 45X, Massachusetts Archives. Boston, Massachusetts. Facsimile. Faulkner Petition, Excerpt. I suffered imprisonment for months and my children were in prison about a month. And upon my trial I was condemned upon such evidence as is now generally thought to be insufficient. I humbly pray that the attainder may be taken off, and that my name that has been wronged may be restored. The strategy of crying, which, according to lore, this root fragment is said to have come from the tree where the executed Salem witches were hanged. The villagers of Salem used the witch trials as a way to settle disputes with the society's outsiders. The accused men and women were innocent of their crimes, and it has taken centuries for many of them to be exonerated. 1900.0018.013 Tree Root Fragment, Date Unknown, Revolutionary Spaces, Bostonian Society. A History of the Delusion in Salem. While belief in witches was pervasive in 17th century Massachusetts, by the 19th century, the Salem witch trials were considered a delusion as illustrated by these compiled lectures about Salem in the 1800s. But still, it would take some victims hundreds of years to have their names cleared. The Supreme Judicial Court, which met on the second floor of this building, was chartered in 1692. As a failsafe to prevent another miscarriage of justice as seen in the Salem witch trials. BF 157665, Bound Book, 1831, Revolutionary Spaces, Bostonian Society. Property owner in her own right originally seeking money as a temporary solution to her predicament, Scott was awarded a third of husband's estate. In the state's eyes, women who held pro-American views and stayed in America while their loyalist husbands fled should be awarded inheritance rights. Likened to a widow, This entitled these women to larger yields of their husbands' estates. Empowered wives could now reclaim their husbands' property as their own, making them independent property owners. Freelove Scott petitioned Massachusetts a total of three times. Massachusetts Archives Collection, 183-241-242, Petition of Freelove Scott to Separate from Her Husband, October 18, 1777. SC1/Series 45X Massachusetts Archives. Boston, Massachusetts. Facsimile, Freelove Scott petition, excerpt, at the present day to support a large family, she hopes to be forgiven in earnestly soliciting your honor to take her necessitory care into consideration and to order her such a sum as may be sufficient to maintain herself and family, till revolution do us part. This dress fragment, dating from 1735, would have been en vogue when Freelove Scott was a child. 40 years later, Scott sought financial support for the dissolution of her marriage. 1910.0050.031 Dress Fragment, circa 1735, Revolutionary Spaces, Bostonian Society, A Hillsborough Treat for Joseph Scott. In these collected letters written by John Andrews, he refers to Joseph Scott, Freelove's husband, as an arms dealer to the British regular troops. Enraged by his complicity with the Crown, Patriot colonists threw a Hillsborough Treat at Scott during a particularly heated confrontation. The Hillsborough Treat was a mixture of mud and human and animal waste. Letters from John Andrews, 1772 through 1776, The Internet Archive, Library of Congress.